Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Eric Cohn.
I'm Ann Thompson.
We were going to talk about all these fall festival announcements, but before we get into that, maybe we should look at the past weekend, because in anticipation of Barbenheimer, you know, I felt like we were constantly coming back to this question of one movie versus the other.
We always knew that Barbie was going to beat Oppie.
Barbie.
We knew that.
But ultimately, what worked was not one or the other. It was the two of them together. Oppenheimer,
which
did
helped
well too.
Oppie. It boosted. There were numbers that, you know, it boosted Oppie. I love it. No, I think it's a great thing. It sort of happened organically. It's sort of one of those things that social media pushed into the ether, and it just took off and it became real. My daughter went, her friends went. It was, and she saw both movies. It's back to back. It's a really wonderful thing to see, and it shows that original content, quote unquote. Of course, Barbie's based on a doll, and Oppenheimer is based on a well-known historic figure. But these are not quote unquote IP projects. They're original. I mean, one is adapted from a book. Oppie is adapted from the Prometheus book. And Barbie is very original.
Barbie. But we should unpack that, because, I mean, that is one big takeaway, is that people want originality. They don't want franchises. I think what's fascinating is that Barbie is essentially a franchise play for Mattel, but it was done through the prism of getting a director who had her own take and, to some degree, letting her run wild with it.
They did, and they made the right choice. They considered not doing that, and they made the right choice.
Right. Of course, now they're considering all the next steps, the Barney.
Which are horrifying, because she doesn't want anything to do with it, at least not yet.
Yeah, well, we'll see when the offer is made.
It's wonderful because Greta enters the Hollywood firmament now. It's not like she wasn't already there, but now she has a whole new level of clout,
which is
exciting, because it means that she can be somebody that pushes these, like Chris Nolan only Chris Nolan gets Oppenheimer made, right? Mm-hmm. Or Spielberg or somebody of that level. Now Greta gets to be one of those people.
Yeah. And she's supposed to do Chronicles of Narnia next. I mean, I don't.
Well, that's a very commercial play, but
I know.
If anyone can pull it off, it's her. I hated the other ones.
And I was never like the biggest fan of those books.
I loved them. I grew up on them and read them over and over. The Voyage of the Dawn Treader is the one I read the most.
But I don't know. I mean, I worry about these kinds of situations where it's like, now this person can do whatever they want. I mean, even Nolan has stumbled in that situation in the past. It's not like every time he makes a movie.
Well, what Nolan is dealing with is that he's trying to remain at a certain commercial level always, to maintain that. Greta Gerwig has been more on the indie side of the world, right, and hasn't had to sustain that level of commerciality. She's never been at that level of commerciality. Right. Now she is.
Right. It was a very.
She was more in the Oscar universe, right?
Yeah, that's true. She's prestige. She went from indie to prestige, in a way.
So now it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously the Chronicles of Narnia is a very commercial play, but now she has the clout to get more challenging things up and running, if she has them in her little arsenal of things she wants to do.
So both movies did well, and both were well reviewed, and it'll be really interesting to see how much longer. I mean, last week we talked a bit about, you know, both movies have Oscar potential. Like, Barbie will be in the zeitgeist for a while. Oppenheimer, it's an interesting question. Like, how long do you keep people invested in this movie? I mean, I've heard a lot of interesting reactions to it, but you know, Nolan's going to have to be out there fronting for this film because the strike's going on. Whereas like Barbie, I feel like it almost transcends not having your actors out there.
Well, they had a lot of actors out there, Damon and Murphy and Blunt were all out there and all that video stuff is still playing out. They got a both thanks to the extension, a strike extension. They both got a lot of stuff done before the movies opened. And so I'm sure they all regret that they're not doing more now, but they're not, it doesn't matter. They did enough ahead of time and there was enough marketing on both of them. I mean, Barbie is going to be a $1 billion movie. It broke records for a woman director and it broke, it's probably the biggest grossing movie of the year. I don't see anything that's going to beat it. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And that itself about in terms of the actress promoting it right before it came out is a good point, because now we're looking this past week, we got all these festival announcements and we got one film that's no longer at a festival, which is Challengers, the Luca Guadagnino movie.
We're going to have to wait
till April. Amazon pushed it till April because Zendaya is too important not to have on that red carpet. And you could see why with these box office results.
And she's been pushed out of, I mean, Dune 2 is a question mark when that's going to turn out to be released. That could be next year. Also, you see, something like Dune 2 doesn't care about Oscars and awards and all that. I would say Challengers maybe wasn't necessarily an Oscars. That looks like a commercial movie to me. Yeah. It looks like something more mainstream. It looks fun. I can't wait to see it.
I have heard that too. I think it would have played really well, but it was definitely more of a commercial play with maybe a Golden Globes kind of a thing to it.
So, that it makes everyone has sat down and made those calculations. What I find fascinating is how many of the movies that were destined to go to the festivals actually showed up at the are going to show up at the festivals.
Yeah. Well, so
and even without talent, you know, Poor Things, they pushed it back to December, but it's still going to show.
And Maestro,
in Venice. Yeah.
Which is not going to have Bradley Cooper, even though I suppose he could have tried to go as a director. We talked about that before. He's not going to go, but it is in Venice. And we'll probably make some other rounds, you know, depending on how things shake down. But that one and The Killer, the two big Netflix movies that will be at the festival. So obviously they're seeing value in launching those movies as award season hopefuls in that context, even without the cast. So
and then there's also Telluride, where they don't announce, but you can use the math where you figure out what's at Venice and what's at Toronto
and how
it's going to debut. The Holdovers, which is totally predictable. Alexander Payne with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, he's always there.
Or Rustin, which is one of the big Netflix titles where they're pushing Coleman Domingo. It's a real person that he's playing. And then there's also, I'm interested, it's also cool, I'm switching around, it's cool that at Venice, Ava DuVernay becomes the first Black director in competition at Venice. What took them so long?
I know.
Why is that true?
Stats, it's a little embarrassing.
It's horrifying.
It's upsetting. Really. But I'm curious about that film.
Origin is the name of the movie.
Yeah, they were showing footage of that to buyers back in Cannes at the market. So it's been around for a bit. She was also, I believe, the first African-American woman on the jury at Cannes. So, you know, she's essentially an A-list Hollywood
director. Ava DuVernay is used to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of like this is what's happening now. It's like it's a whole global industry that has, you know, been underrepresented.
Slowly under catch up. So, very, very slowly. So some of the movies that are not showing are Napoleon, right? The Ridley Scott with Joaquin Phoenix, which I cannot wait. I looked at the trailer for this. It's insane. But I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that. That's the kind of movie they could hold back because they want to give everybody more time. Like you could imagine Villeneuve wants to be in the editing room for a little longer.
Yeah, it's the same longer.
Thing as Dune. Yeah.
Also, these are big commercial.
Big movies.
Yeah. Like they can do something kind of as a standalone event to launch it. It doesn't have to be a festival movie in that respect. But look, we do get a new Woody Allen movie. We do get a new Roman Polanski movie. We get a new Luc Besson movie. So,
are you lumping all these Me Too directors together, Eric?
I mean,
are you really? They're all very different.
Really a trend, but that's what the headlines are telling us. I mean, I think it is fascinating that Venice can pull this off because obviously
because they're European because they have a different sensibility than we do. Luc Besson was completely exonerated in court. Completely.
So
it took years, but he was exonerated in the French courts. For some reason, it took a really long time. Woody Allen was never sent into, he was never indicted. He was never accused in court. Never, it never happened. And the other, the one with Polanski, we all know he was guilty. He pleaded guilty. He's in exile. And do we punish him forever and never look at his movies again? It's an interesting question.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating because it's like if you look at
and he was forgiven by the woman herself,
Samantha Geimer. I mean, if you look at that question in a North American context, the answer is yes. They're all essentially still, you know, not considered. You know, these are not films that are getting released.
They've been canceled in the U.S.
But the truth is we've still had Woody Allen movie. Like there has that Roman Polanski won a César for his last film and it won at Venice. And Woody Allen has been making movies that have played at festivals.
This is the first time he's made a French movie. We predicted a long time ago that what he would have to do is raise funds overseas in order to make his movies. And of course, that's what he's done. I want to see Coupe de Change. I actually do.
I mean, I will watch movies from anyone. I don't have like a moral stance on these particular situations, but I am curious to see how the narrative plays out. I mean, if
they won't get released in the U.S., that's all.
Like, if Coup de Chance gets Woody Allen's best reviews since Midnight in Paris, does that give buyers confidence that they can get away with this? I mean, I've pointed out to people before, you know, Chinatown will play in, you know, rep houses in the U.S. all the time. And it does.
I went really to see it on a great double bill with Sorcerer. And I was as happy as I've been in a long time.
But it is an interesting question of like the fact that Polanski is still a respected filmmaker from a historical standpoint doesn't mean that risk adverse distributors are willing to take on his latest.
And they probably shouldn't. It doesn't make sense inside the universe of the United States. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but what do you make now of Coup de Chance? I mean, if it is really good, why not submit it as the French Oscar submission?
Oh my God, they would be foolish. They would be so foolish.
Yeah, so that'll be a real TBD.
Although, I'll tell you something. There is a really big, sizable number of older white men who totally support Woody Allen and Roman Polanski.
Yeah, I don't know like exactly what.
And maybe they support Luc Besson. That I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, and again, we got to see the movies to see if they're any good and make it worth this discourse at all. But it is really interesting. It's like Venice has suddenly become the place. Not even Cannes will show a Woody Allen movie now. So, you know, Venice will be asking these.
And they did show them for many years.
So meanwhile, we also
got nowhere to be found is at Ethan Coen's movie, Drive Away Dolls. Yeah, looks like that's getting pushed back. That's again, a movie I was hearing. We'll see.
Yes. I think also. So
it's
I
a comedy. It's a comedy. So it's not a slam dunk Oscar movie, probably.
I spoke with Cameron Bailey out of Toronto this week, and he did say that while none of the films that have been announced at TIFF were pulled, that there were films they were in discussion for or had planned to show that are not showing, and perhaps that was one. There could be others, but we do know now that they have they announced a bunch of stuff. We got films this week that we thought we were going to get last week, and then they punted it to buy themselves some time. But the opening
night
you
predicted the opening night movie. You were right about that.
To be clear, it's called reporting. It was not a blind prediction. I had some sources. But they were accurate that the Hayao Miyazaki film called The Boy and the Heron for the North American release, it's called How Do You Live in Japan, will open. And I think that's actually really
incredible. Very happy about that. I think it's lovely.
Excited about it. It opened in Japan. It was the top opening for Studio Ghibli.
So this is his big comeback after he said he was retiring and he wasn't going to make any more movies. And of course, that wasn't true.
Yeah, although now it sounds like it might be, at least that's the way this one's being positioned. I mean, he's 82 and he takes his time making movies, but the response in Japan has been really strong. So it'll be interesting to see how the awards conversation, once we see it, because of course Cameron is throwing down that, you know, as Guillermo del Toro said, animation is not a genre, animation is film. Does this become a best picture contender the way that, you know, we were originally talking about Pinocchio last year?
It's going to stay the same where all the animated films end up in the animated category. It's just the way it is. It's just the way the Academy at large, many of them actors, think. Alas, it's not the way it should be, but that's how it is. Documentaries are never going to be nominated for Best Picture. Give it up, Eric. Give it
up.
The doc
thing could, my doc argument for Best Picture took a hit with the whole new theatrical requirement in terms of the number of markets you have to open in for Best
Picture.
Yeah,
that's a problem. That's a big problem. That's a big problem for any small indies.
But I don't know. We'll see about the Miyazaki thing. The other challenge is that he is, notoriously press shy. He's not even going to go to TIFF for the opening night film. So you're not going to have the elevated profile of an Oscar campaigner. Like, you kind of just need this movie to work.
I feel very fortunate that I got to interview him twice. Once in a back room, press room thing at Comic-Con, right? I don't even remember which movie it was for. With a group. It was a group. And once one-on-one on Zoom in Japan from the Disney studio. I also went to an Academy thing where they did a huge tribute to him. I couldn't be more respectful and admiring of any filmmaker than I am of Miyazaki.
I was lucky enough to get tickets to the rather small Studio Ghibli Museum in Tokyo, and it blew my mind. It's like everything is so delicate and handmade. It's another era. He represents.
Well, they did do an exhibit here for the Academy Museum, but I would love to see the one you're talking about.
I mean, you see his studio, you see original hand-drawn things, and just
they had his animation desk here at the Academy Museum
too. Yeah. I mean, it's like that itself, I assume, would galvanize the animation community in a big way. But also, he does cross over beyond. I mean, he has respect from the entire industry. It's not just the animation world in terms of the kind of work that he does and how singular it is. He's an auteur. So the Best Picture argument perhaps could be a part of that. If the movie.
Well, he did win the Oscar for Spirited Away, the animation Oscar. So we shall see. Here's what struck me as I was looking through the whole TIFF, especially the TIFF lineup. Yes. It's interesting. Yeah. The Venice lineup is like the big guns, right. Michael Mann and, Ferrari. And it's just the
Which
big
is
names
also closing New York,
are there. The TIFF lineup, at least for me, I'm curious to see if that's true for you. There were lots of movies there that I knew nothing about.
Well,
really?
There's a lot of movies for sale that are sort of high profile, but not awards titles. So, usually in TIFF, you'll have maybe one or two, like a Still Alice or something, or an I, Tonya, that's like a sales title that gets bought and rushed into award season. This year, it's like, you're going through it and it's like, wow, there's actually a lot of actors who directed.
Yeah,
movies.
There's big, like I, for one, had not heard of Lee, the Ellen Curris film with
she's actually been Kate working Winslet. On that for a long time.
So I am very excited about that. I had heard of Viggo Mortensen's Western, which is called The Dead Don't Hurt.
With Vicky Creeps,
who I love, as you know. The worst title of all is The We End Start From. They should change that right now. Not a good title.
What about Knox Goes Away from Michael Keaton, auteur?
He's a smart guy. I will take a chance on anything he does. I mean, Tony Goldwyn, another actor directing, has done that before. But he's got Robert De Niro and Rose Byrne. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, the Dumb Money movie with Paul Dano that's about the GameStop, stock thing sounds fun. There's stuff that will probably be crowd pleasers in a way because TIFF, sells tickets to the public. And even if it's not an awards title, it could still benefit from strong word of mouth.
Sure. That's why they're booking them. The sales titles, this is what I predicted. They're playing the sales titles to see how they play for the audience, and that's how they're going to sell them.
Yeah, they don't need the kind of noise around red carpets if the movies work in this kind. In some ways, they might actually benefit from just getting reviewed and having the director there and so forth. But we have to see it, how do these movies play? I mean, there's also a question of would they have been more hurt if they waited, say, for Sundance? Or
well, here's part of what's going to happen. It's interesting. Next Gull Wins, the Searchlight movie with directed by Taika Waititi, that is going still. They announced it early to TIFF. They didn't pull it or anything.
Right.
But they're trying to get a waiver for him to promote the movie as a director, even though he can't because he's in it for 5 minutes.
Right. So, but what we've heard is that there may be the possibility that if an actor it has a very small role in the movie they directed, and they don't talk about that side of things since SAG might enable them.
This is what we've have to find out.
But
you know, that's
question
what
with that one is that it's an AMPTP.
It's a big signatory. Absolutely right. Right. And it's really a pity that these specialty divisions, which are already on the ropes,
right,
which are already under duress, which are already trying to make it, you know, as the trying to lure the adults back to the theaters, and it's all dicey. This is a blow to them. This is a real punishing blow that to not have Emma Stone be able to promote Poor Things. That's why they pushed it back to December. So you're going to end up with this logjam now of movies. A lot of movies are going to push back to December.
Yeah, it could end up being a very competitive holiday season.
Like, what's going to happen to Killers of the Flower Moon?
They look prescient now for getting some press out of the way at Cannes. I mean, they had the whole cast there on the red carpet and did all that stuff then. So there's some value there. And the movie is a Scorsese movie, and Scorsese is a DGA member.
And he's in the movie also. So he's also a SAG member.
Yeah, that's true. But again, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much. He's not in the movie that much.
It isn't. I understand that they could consider taking him out, but it's the end of the movie. It wouldn't work.
It's something that should be.
It's really brilliant and wonderful.
But he just doesn't have to answer questions about you're going to boot Scorsese from SAG because he's talking about directing Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, I think it's the union is relatively sane about some of these questions. The three words that I never expected to be out there as much in the past few months as they have been are Duncan Crabtree Ireland. He seems to have all the answers about the fate
of the
industry.
As far as the strike stuff goes, it's very interesting. We are really jumping around today. It's very interesting the way they have pivoted and changed their approach.
Yeah.
And it's coming from SAG-AFTRA. It's coming from them and the writers. They're saying, hey, we're not enemies. Let's talk civilized. Let's pull the rhetoric down. And that's the right thing to do. A lot of people think they should actually shut down the rhetoric altogether and put a big cone of silence on everything, because the rhetoric isn't getting anyone anywhere at all.
It is overheated now, but obviously there's also this desire to make it clear what they're asking for. So it's like, you know, they're not just doing this just to do it, that they feel like there's something real on the line. But I think it's interesting that so Duncan Crabtree Ireland, chief negotiator, is now saying that SAG is looking at some sort of interim agreement to be able to promote movies on the festival circuit if you're not part of AMPTP. And if that works well,
it hasn't happened yet,
but if that does happen, I'm just saying that could actually be really valuable for SAG, because it puts the studios on notice more. Like, hey, everyone else is moving along, there's work getting done, so you better come to the table, because there's stuff happening without you now. And Wall Street,
well, that's why they're doing the waivers with the independents and on the production side. But have you heard of actual waivers on the promotion side actually going through?
Not yet, but just as we're recording, I mean, earlier today, this is a Thursday, that there were stories that saying that they're looking at that and what that will look like. Obviously, they need to get it figured out really soon, but everything's happening super fast, and the festivals are still a couple of weeks out. So we could see, you know, say next week or the following one.
Something we can see if Annette Bening gets her tribute for NIAID at Telluride.
Sounds like a challenge.
And then you have, but you know, if Jimmy Chin and Chai Vassarhely are perfectly capable of promoting NIAID, and that's, I'm hearing good things about that one. I'm excited.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, the litmus is what's happening right now. So Locarno is next week, and Riz Ahmed was supposed to get a tribute there, and he's not going to be there now. So we're already seeing immediate effects for these things. The question is, how quickly can people move to strategize about the next steps? Like, TIFF has time, but they can't rest easy. You know, SAG has to get back to them soon about what they're actually going to allow people to do. So that's sort of TBD. Anyway, next week, I'll be on vacation, but we already have an episode in the bag, which is convenient. And we had a really great talk with Charles King.
This was one of my favorite talks. It's he's a He's somebody who started out as an agent, and then he took a great risk. I mean, he was very successful, and he took at William Morris Endeavor and whatever it's called, WME, whatever it's called now. And he actually went and started his own company, Macro, and he is someone who can address all sorts of issues, and he did in a very helpful way.
Stay tuned, because we do have some thoughts on the strike with Charles.
He was good. Yeah. So,
all right, Anne. Well, I'll see you when I'm back, but to be continued.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.